child, the situation makes me kind of nervous. Yes, I rise up from her arm. She says, I guess you call this love. I call it room service. But don't you come on back to the woman, to the wall.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
On Monday, United Airlines said it reached tentative agreements with two unions representing its workers. The bankrupt airline is seeking ratification of a contract with the Transport Workers Union and the Professional Airline Flight Control Association by Thursday. The airline is attempting to impose pay cuts on nearly 8,500 employees in an attempt to save $112 million a year. The two unions involved in Monday's agreement only represent 195 members. Last Thursday, the flight attendants threatened that if pay cuts are imposed, they will strike. In addition, the airline has yet to reach agreements with unions representing mechanics and ramp workers. A bankruptcy court hearing that will determine the fate of United's plan to invalidate existing contracts is scheduled to start on Friday.
Nurses on strike at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are headed back to the bargaining table after 21 days on strike. The UFCW's Ed Finkelstein told Workers Independent News by cell phone that new talks will happen this week.
The federal mediator just announced minutes ago that the nurses and the hospital will be going back into negotiations this coming Friday. The union is hopeful that they'll have serious negotiations, meaningful negotiations.
Finkelstein says the union hopes these talks will be productive.
If they do what happened before, then it'll be a short negotiation. But we're being optimistic at this point that the hospital will come back into meaningful negotiations.
Finkelstein says solidarity among striking nurses is strong and that there's been an outpouring of community support for their strike. Over the weekend at a Rams home game, striking nurses collected coats and other items for indigent St. Louis area people and also for tsunami relief. Finkelstein says key issues in the strike don't revolve around money, but instead around patient care.
Employees at New York City's 311 helpline are calling for assistance against what organizers call a vicious anti-union campaign. Labor organizers for the Communication Workers of America, Local 1180, are alleging that King Teleservices, a private company that handles some of the calls on the line, has been trying to prevent attempts by employees to unionize. While company management says they have not been practicing intimidation, a memo was circulated in December that strongly urged employees to not sign any union petitions or cards. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 37 companies are now featured on WashTech's offshore tracker. Located at techsunite.org, the tracker keeps track of jobs that have been lost due to offshoring. Between the beginning of 2000 and the end of 2004, more than 300,000 jobs have been sent out of the United States, resulting in an estimated 154,000 jobs lost. The tracker also monitors where those jobs are going. The most recent update of 20,000 jobs sent offshore includes countries like Russia, Ghana, Honduras, and of course, India and China.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Home Depot is coming to my town, riding in on tracks of gold, courtesy of us taxpayers. This is not merely another of Home Depot's big box stores, mind you, but by gollies, a high-tech data center. To get the giant corporation to choose Austin, state and local officials approached it in the professional manner that corporations now expect. By frantically hurling huge sackfuls of taxpayers' money at them, desperately hoping that our sacks are fuller than those being hurled by other cities. In this case, our sacks contain more than $30 million, and, lucky us, Home Depot grabbed them. Our public officials are now peacocking around over this deal, bragging that they're delivering 500 jobs to we the people, averaging $58,000 a year in pay. Actually, though, you wouldn't get one paying $58,000. That average includes the salary, bonuses, and such of those up in the new data center's executive suite. Averages, you see, are tricksters. If you are paid $20,000, for example, and the top dog gets $200,000, you're averaging $110,000 each. Home Depot's package includes nearly $6 million in a special tax break from the Austin School District. Yes, that means $6 million that should go to the education of school kids will not, for district officials have given this corporation an exemption from paying its school taxes. Yet the Austin School Board is trying to pull a fast one on us by asserting that the state reimburses school districts for any revenue they lose when they dole out tax breaks to corporations. As one board member put it, there is no cost to the Austin taxpayer. Earth to school board. The Austin taxpayer is also a state taxpayer. The tax giveaway to Home Depot still comes from our pockets, and it's still $6 million that could have been added to education, but now won't be. This is Jim Hightower saying, Home Depot is super rich. Why shouldn't it pay its taxes like our homegrown businesses do?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, a little more evidence here that we may not be the smartest species on Earth. Well, intellectually we are, no doubt about that. I think. They haven't figured out yet how to communicate with whales and dolphins. Their brains are actually larger and more complex than ours, so there's a debate in the animal circles about that. But nonetheless, just minutes before the tsunami crashed into a southern Indian wildlife sanctuary, a lighthouse lookout reported an unusual sight, a herd of antelopes stampeding from the shoreline toward the safety of a nearby hilltop. This from today's newspaper. From the Wall Street Journal, with reporting from Chris Pretze in Singapore, Chi Rong in Beijing, and Carolyn Fernandez in Kuala Lumpur. The man said he saw the animals on the seafront running away from the coast toward the forests at A.D. Baruha, a wildlife warden in the state of Tamil Nadu, recounting the story of the desperate flight of the animals as told to him by a startled outlook. 10 minutes later, the waves hit. The animals had run to safety. Added Mr. Mirbaru, I am sure animals have a sense of foreboding, a sixth sense. Now, what does this have to do with people? I'm going to tell you in a minute. And this is actually a very significant thing. This ties into this whole thing, this new announcement from, I believe it was Pfizer, the manufacturer of, if it is Pfizer, well, as we dig down the stack, we'll get to it here, the manufacturer of Prozac. And what does this have to do with depression? What does this have to do with people? But hear this animal story, and what is it, you know, and how does this all tie together? It does, by the way, trust me. Follow along. In Sri Lanka, the island nation off India's southern tip, they write in today's Wall Street Journal, more than 3,000 people were killed. Yet at Yala National Park, just up the coast from where the destruction was most severe, all the elephants, leopards, deer, and other wild animals managed to survive the mighty waves, said H.D. Ratanyake, deputy director of the country's wildlife department. He said, I haven't seen any effects on animals. They all escaped. Asked to explain the survival of the animals, they had a feeling, he says. It's pretty unequivocal, said Matthew van Lierop, an expert in animal behavior at the Johannesburg Zoo in South Africa. It's pretty unequivocal that certain animals can get warnings of quakes before they happen. In China, for example, before an earthquake measuring 7.3 on the Richter scale hit the city of Haixing in 1975 during the depths of winter, locals reported seeing snakes emerging from hibernation, only to freeze to death on the roads. Strange animal behavior was one of the number of signals that allowed local officials to raise the alarm several days in advance. Several days in advance! To save virtually the entire population of the city, which was camped outside when the earthquake struck. You get this? Oh. You can hear the cat. The mouse is out. We're going to name him Thomas Jefferson. We've got a cat that's going absolutely nuts. The studio cat, yes. So anyhow, and Louise is trying to catch up. He's running around out there someplace because the cat's running from window to window. Anyhow, here's this story. See, and how does the cat know the mouse is out there? It's a very subtle thing here. Before the earthquake struck Hellas, Greece in 373 BC, snakes, weasels, and worms abandoned the city. Interesting. Even in China, there was an earthquake 400 times more powerful than the atomic bomb that exploded over Hiroshima, swallowed up the city of Changshan, and killed 200,000 people, a quarter million people. Yet, according to the United Nations report, in a county adjacent to Changshan, residents were well prepared for the disaster, partly because they noticed nocturnal animals such as weasels and rats scampering around in broad daylight. Now, what does this have to do with anything? Well, here's another interesting story. Let me juxtapose this for you. This is from CNN, article by Tom Watkins. An internal document, it wasn't Pfizer, it's Eli Lilly. My apologies. An internal document purportedly from Eli Lilly and Company made public Monday appears to show that the drug maker, Eli Lilly, had data for more than 15 years showing the patients on its antidepressant Prozac were far more likely to attempt suicide and show hostility than were patients on other antidepressants, and that the company attempted to minimize public awareness of the side effects. CNN was given the document by Congressman Maurice Hinchey, a Democrat of New York. He said, quote, the case demonstrates the need for Congress to mandate the complete disclosure of all clinical studies for FDA-approved drugs so that patients and their doctors, not drug companies, decide whether the benefits of taking a certain medicine outweigh the risks. Consider some of the following statistics. 2.3% of users of Prozac, or fluoxetine, the generic name for it, suffered psychotic depression while on the drug, more than double the next highest rate of patients on another antidepressant. In addition, the paper said that 1.6% of patients reported incidents of hostility, more than double the rate reported by patients on any of four other commonly used antidepressants. There have long been stories, by the way, in the media, some confirmed, some not, about the rash of school killings over the last decade, that so many of these kids were on antidepressants. It would be interesting to know what brands. I've never seen a good roundup piece on that. I suspect it's one of those kind of stories that nobody in the mainstream media wants to go for because they don't want to lose Eli Lilly's advertising dollars, and in any case, or the drug industry's advertising dollars in general. The trial review in the document said that 0.8% of users of Prozac reported causing an intentional injury, eight times the rate associated with other antidepressants. In 19% of patients, the drug may produce nervousness, anxiety, agitation, or insomnia. Now, where was this reported? In the Journal of the American Medical Association, in the New England Journal of Medicine, in any of the American journals that accept advertising from the drug companies? No. It was reported in the British Medical Journal. In the British Medical Journal, where they have a national health system. that doesn't depend on kickbacks and fees from pharmaceutical companies. The legislators don't get money from the pharmaceutical companies to write legislation like this insane Medicare bill. The Journal said the documents disappeared in 1994 during the case of Joseph Westbacker, a printing press operator who had killed eight people at his Louisville, Kentucky workplace 5 years before while taking fluoxetine. That's Prozac. He then, or the generic version, he then shot and killed himself. Each of the four pages of the paper obtained by CNN is stamped confidential. Now, here's the interesting thing. Let me tie this back to the animals now. There are a certain number of people who are depressed. There are people who experience clinical depression. And sometimes it is serious. Sometimes it is life-threatening. Apparently, some antidepressants can make it worse and can, in fact, dramatically increase the possibility of people who are depressed committing suicide. Others suggest that perhaps it's going to decrease it. We're looking at skewed populations. There's sample bias. That argument's going to go on forever. But here's the interesting thing. Some 10 years ago or so, I wrote about this in one of my ADD books. I believe it's in Beyond ADD. I'm not sure. Frankly, I don't remember. It's in one of the books on attention deficit disorder that I've written. It might be in Tom Hartman's Complete Guide to ADHD. I'll have to dig it out. Anyhow, there was a study that was done by an American research group in collaboration with some Brits in Africa. In, as I recall, either Kenya or Tanzania. And the question was, chimpanzees experience depression just like human beings do. And they experience it in ways that are very similar to human beings. It's episodic, that is, it comes and goes. So they sort of take turns being depressed. At any given moment, somewhere between 5 and 15% of the population is depressed. When they're depressed, they socially disengage, they withdraw from the group, they hang out around the periphery or the perimeter of the group rather than being an active part of it. They tend not to sleep well. They're hypervigilant. They're constantly scanning their environment as if they are in extreme danger. And yet they are socially disengaged. They become less, they don't eat as well, they're not as sexually active, they're not as socially active. All the classic symptoms of clinical depression. Happens in chimpanzees just like people. So they went into this troop of chimps and said, let's see what happens if we remove the depressed chimpanzees. So they go in with dart guns, tranquilizer darts, and they observe them for a week or so and figure out, okay, these, out of these 30 or 40 chimps in this troop, these three or four guys or six or seven or whatever, these are the depressed ones. And they dart them and remove them. And say, now let's see what this does to the social order of the chimpanzees in the wild. The assumption being that the monkeys, well, they're not chimps, they're not monkeys, but whatever. That the chimpanzees are going to, hey, let's have a party. The depressed bummer chimps have gone. Let's boogie. Well, what happened was that over a 6-month period, the entire chimp troop, a band of chimpanzees is called a troop, the entire troop died. Dead. All of them. Turns out that the depressed chimps were the ones who, because they were socially disengaged, because they were insomniac, because they were hypervigilant, they're the ones who retreated to the periphery of the tribe, of the troop, and they're the ones who first noticed predators coming to kill the other chimpanzees. They're the ones who noticed the python coming. They're the ones who noticed the cheetah slinking through the forest. And they're the ones who screamed the alarm. They were the early warning system. And here we find this in our genes as well. And you wonder, you look back at the classic, well-known, serious depressives in society. Franz Kafka, Albert Camus, Hemingway, Churchill. And in fact, the wrap-up of the study, the woman who wrote it, I can't remember her name, she in the wrap-up to the study, this psychologist, she said, could it be that the depressives among us are our early warning system. Are our folks waving the flag saying, look out, folks, there's danger? If you've ever read Franz Kafka, The Prisoner, for example, if you've never read The Prisoner by Franz Kafka, it's just a little short story. It's about what it would be like to live in John Ashcroft, Bill, and George W. Bush's Guantanamo world. Perhaps the depressive among us are serving an important social function. Not to say that it's unpleasant, and not to say that we shouldn't necessarily medicate or help such people. But the point is that we and the animals, I think that there's a whole lot more here than this little mechanistic view of, oh, it's just a machine, just take a pill, has any understanding of. 20 minutes past the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Bringing
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. And then there's, of course, what's called exogenous depression. When, you know, things happen that you'd get a naturally sad response to. That's a healthy thing. It's actually an appropriate thing. And when you try and suppress that with medication, then you get all sorts of secondary problems. We need to be reconsidering a lot of these things. But the bigger issue here is that we are discovering now that a corporation for profit has apparently been lying to us or hiding from us information. Which brings us to our quote for the day from President Theodore Roosevelt, 1906. He said, and I quote, "Behind the ostensible government sits enthroned an invisible government owing no allegiance and acknowledging no responsibility to the people. To destroy this invisible government, to befoul the unholy alliance between corrupt business and corrupt politics, is the first task of the statesmanship of today." President Theodore Roosevelt in 1906. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. TomHartman.com, the website, if you want to drop into the chat room. You're welcome to come visit. We have a new chat room. We've moved out of the CompuServe forum. This is one right off our website, a little easier to get into than for some folks. Some folks had no problem getting into the CompuServe one. Some folks had a real challenge. And so you know, we figured we'd just go off. And this one has some nice features. You can color your typeface, and you can put URLs, hyperlinks in, and things like that. And, you know, and so on. So, you know, although I still recommend for interesting discussions of the day that you visit the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Go to CompuServe.com and go down to the forum directory, and you can track it down. It's in the D's. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alex in New York City on the line. Hey, Alex, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
What's up?
Let's first start off by saying that this is not a conspiracy thing or anything like that. It's just really bad timing, but I want to know what you think about Representative Matsui passing away. And he was apparently the point person for the Democrats on the Social Security bill. My question is, can you comment on that? And also, what happens to his seat?
I don't know what happens to his seat because I don't know what district he represents. He's from California, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Then, frankly, I'm not that familiar with California law. My guess would be that Governor Schwarzenegger would appoint somebody, but I may well be wrong. I don't know. Yes, he was, if not the, certainly one of the most prominent Democrats fighting the Social Security fight. There are others, of course. I'm willing to... we live in strange times, Alex. I mean, here you have John Ashcroft running against a guy, and he goes down in a plane crash. Ashcroft for the Senate. Ashcroft.
Wellstone?
Yeah. What was his name?
Wellstone?
No. Wellstone is the second one I was going to get to. But Ashcroft was running against a guy whose plane crashed. His wife ended up taking the seat because Ashcroft lost to a dead guy. His plane crashed just a few weeks before the election. 2 years later, Wellstone goes down in a plane crash, very similar circumstances. Both of these are, as far as I know, largely unsolved mysteries. And in fact, Wellstone's plane, Teddy Kennedy was supposed to be with him in that plane and wasn't at the last minute. And now Matsui. Yeah, I agree with you. Let's not go into the tinfoil hat zone. And at the same time, you've got so much Stalinesque stuff going on in Washington D.C. You know, you're signing loyalty oaths to get in to see the president. The president only meeting with people who give him large quantities of money. This is the kind of stuff that happened in Stalin's Russia, in Hitler's Germany. I don't think we're at the Night of the Long Knives. The Night of the Long Knives was that night what was it, 1936, I think, 35, when Hitler had murdered all of his, particularly Rome, all of his political opponents. I don't think that that's the case, but I'm uncomfortable with it.
It's just a terrible coincidence.
Yeah, it has. Let's just assume that that's the case. Alex, thanks for the call. Mel Carnahan, that's the guy that died in the plane crash. Thank you, Louise. Ashcroft lost to. Anyhow, 29 minutes past the hour.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live, and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, do you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
On Monday, United Airlines said it reached tentative agreements with two unions representing its workers. The bankrupt airline is seeking ratification of a contract with the Transport Workers Union and the Professional Airline Flight Control Association by Thursday. The airline is attempting to impose pay cuts on nearly 8,500 employees in an attempt to save $112 million a year. The two unions involved in Monday's agreement only represent 195 members. Last Thursday, the flight attendants threatened that if pay cuts are imposed, they will strike. In addition, the airline has yet to reach agreements with unions representing mechanics and ramp workers. A bankruptcy court hearing that will determine the fate of United's plan to invalidate existing contracts is scheduled to start on Friday.
Nurses on strike at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are headed back to the bargaining table after 21 days on strike. The UFCW's Ed Finkelstein told Workers Independent News by cell phone that new talks will happen this week.
The federal mediator just announced minutes ago that the nurses and the hospital will be going back into negotiations this coming Friday. The union is hopeful that they'll have serious negotiations, meaningful negotiations.
Finkelstein says the union hopes these talks will be productive.
If they do what happened before, then it'll be a short negotiation, but we're being optimistic at this point that the hospital will come back into meaningful negotiation.
Finkelstein says solidarity among striking nurses is strong and that there's been an outpouring of community support for their strike. Over the weekend at a Rams home game, striking nurses collected coats and other items for indigent St. Louis area people and also for tsunami relief. Finkelstein says key issues in the strike don't revolve around money, but instead around patient care.
Employees at New York City's 311 helpline are calling for assistance against what organizers call a vicious anti-union campaign. Labor organizers for the Communication Workers of America, Local 1180, are alleging that King Teleservices, a private company that handles some of the calls on the line, has been trying to prevent attempts by employees to unionize. While company management says they have not been practicing intimidation, a memo was circulated in December that strongly urged employees to not sign any union petitions or cards. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 37 companies are now featured on WashTech's offshore tracker. Located at techsunite.org, the tracker keeps track of jobs that have been lost due to offshoring. Between the beginning of 2000 and the end of 2004, more than 300,000 jobs have been sent out of the United States, resulting in an estimated 154,000 jobs lost. The tracker also monitors where those jobs are going. The most recent update of 20,000 jobs sent offshore includes countries like Russia, Ghana, Honduras, and of course, India and China.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
In this world, there's a whole lot of trouble, baby. In this world, there's a whole lot of pain. In this world, there's a whole lot of trouble, but a whole lot of ground to gain. Why take when you could be giving? Why watch as the world goes by? It's a hard enough life to be living. Why walk when you can fly?
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I wrote an article for CommonDreams.org. It's up on the top of their front page today. It was published yesterday. It's called Dialing for Democracy. About the need to contact your senator The number, by the way, for the switchboard at the United States Congress, 202-224-3121. And tell your senator that you would like them to consider contesting the vote. The cat is going nuts, I'm telling you. Thomas Jefferson is out there somewhere. Anyhow, that you would like your senator to contest the validity of the electors from Ohio, as have the electors, members of the Electoral College. This has never happened before in the history of the Republic. Members of the Electoral College from five different states now, Connecticut, New York, Maine, Vermont, and Massachusetts, in fact, in Massachusetts, they did a whole hoop-de-doop, you know, where they came out with top hats and tuxedos. These electors have called for an investigation into vote fraud in the state of Ohio and other states. It's fairly clear to me, anyway, having looked at the statistics and the numbers and the information that I've been able to gather and that others have gathered, fairly solid information, that vote fraud occurred in Florida, Ohio, and New Mexico, at the very least. To ask a senator to join the members of Congress, John Conyers is going to lead this thing, in saying vote fraud is going on, let's do something about this, or let's at least investigate this. And Jill in San Jose sends me an email. Thanks for the explanation of what would happen should the Electoral College be challenged. By the way, most folks don't know this. I pointed out, if a senator joins with a member of Congress, then the House and Senate separate. They go into the separate chambers. There's 2 hours of debate. Nobody can speak for more than 5 minutes during those 2 hours of debate. At the end of 2 hours, a vote is held in both chambers. If both the House and the Senate vote by majority to reject the electors, in this case from Ohio, and then they come back and they report that vote, then the slate of electors from Ohio are thrown out. There not being enough electors at that point for there to be a majority for president, the vote is thrown to the House of Representatives, where each state has one vote. Well, there's more red states than blue states, so George Bush would still end up president. This is not going to change the outcome of the election. But what it would do is it would bring front and center into the mainstream media and into the mainstream dialogue, the mainstream discourse, this whole concept that our elections have been stolen by private corporations who are beholden to and in bed with largely Republican interests. And this is something that I think is wrong. It's just plain old simple wrong. The beating heart of our democracy, our vote, should not be put out for sale and should not be run by private corporations who tell us that we have no damn business knowing what's going on inside their software as they manipulate our votes. I'm sorry. Now, in the midst of this, I get this email from Michael Arnold, a Nader. He signs himself a Nader voter. He says, so what? This in response to my email saying, you know, get your senator involved. He says, so what? There's no real difference between Bush or Kerry except their personalities. Write and talk all you want, Tom. The real issue here isn't a one-party system. The real issue here is it's a one-party system, he says. More and more people are finally realizing it, and now the so-called progressives have nothing to write about except the same old BS. Reform the party, there's no money in it for them. Take back the country, you can't take back something you never had, he writes. He continues, it's all about the money, the military complex and the greedies who control it, and of course the media, which includes you, which shores up the little scam, he says. In military, media, and money, the grand trifecta, they've got total control, and until you start talking about that, all your carefully written words are, well, just useless and increasingly boring, writes Michael Arnold. I do, however, feel for the saps who work so hard only to be punked in the end by Kerry and the Dems. Kerry was destined to lose. He was a throwaway candidate. They couldn't let him win when they needed Bush to finish the job in Iraq, and he knew that. He was one of the team, Tom. It really is that simple. You should stop advising people to expend more energy on what was a big setup and an even bigger lie to begin with. Let it go, says Michael Arnold, and for heaven's sake, stop calling yourself a progressive. Republican light will do nicely. Well, Michael, and he signs himself Arnold Voter, a Nader Voter. And I would say to Michael, number one, signing yourself Nader Voter identifies you as a fool, let's say, or at least someone who behaves foolishly in this election in particular. And secondly, I don't see anywhere in here one single positive suggestion. It's like, you know, okay, yeah, let's walk away. Let's just throw up our hands. Let's just give up.
They've got it, you know, blah, blah, blah. This kind of, frankly, pathetic, whiny, defeatist rhetoric is exactly what Ed Gillespie, the former Enron lobbyist and now chairman of the Republican National Party, would want. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if Ed Gillespie wrote this letter or had it sent to me over the name of Michael Arnold, Nader voter, because it is exactly what the Republican Party wants you to know. The extreme left and the extreme right, you've got, yeah, on the right hand, on the right, you've got people out there saying the same thing. They're out in Montana, you know, building barricades and hoarding submachine guns. And not just in Montana, they're all over the country. And on the extreme left, you got people saying the same thing. Ah, screw it, it's a corrupt system. And not willing to lift a finger to participate. If you really care about this country, Michael, get involved. Don't sit around whining and complaining and writing pathetic letters like this to those of us who are actually trying to make some change. Thank you very much. Speaking of making some change, and back to our animals and our drugs, a few weeks ago we learned about a plan from the Environmental Protection Agency to test the toxicity of chemicals, this from MSNBC, on children in exchange for $970 and some lovely parting gifts. This week, it's the Food and Drug Administration and the National Institutes of Mental Health. Yes, they're looking for healthy 9 to 18-year-olds to give 10 milligrams a day of dextroamphetamine, the active ingredient in many of the ADHD drugs, followed by an MRI brain scan. In exchange for this, your parents will get $570. And yet studies by the the Drug Control Agency, the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, studies sponsored by DEA show that when you give kids amphetamines, you damage their brains. So here we have this plan. Let's give healthy kids amphetamines, give them an MRI, see what happens, and give them $570. It doesn't matter what happens for the rest of their lives, right? What's going on? And then now we have a law in Michigan, in the state of Michigan. This David Eggert, Associated Press writer. Their last evening together of Friday, Susan Halverson and her husband Jim Jabeck stayed in. It was a simple start to what was supposed to be a restful 2004. Well, I'll give you the short version. They're watching this movie. He has a little pain in his thigh. He takes Vioxx, a drug to treat his rheumatoid arthritis. Next morning, she finds him dead. Heart attack. He was 34 years old. She would like to do something about this. But it turns out that in their infinite wisdom, the legislators of the state of Michigan, and no doubt they are not alone in the United States, and no doubt the drug companies are out there right now knocking on the doors of legislators from state to state, from all across the country, asking for the same thing. In the state of Michigan, you cannot sue a drug company for a drug which has been approved by the FDA, even if the drug company lied, even if the drug company produced something it knew would kill people, even if the drug company killed you or a friend of yours or a relative of yours. You simply cannot sue. Sorry. This is like tort reform. This whole tort reform thing. Here's the bottom line of tort reform. What they're trying to cap is pain and suffering damages. They're trying to cap it at $250,000. They want to say if your child is permanently disabled because of a drunken doctor, an incompetent doctor. We're not talking about the average mistake. That would not make it through a jury. We still have juries in this country, and they still, by and large, are rational. And if they are irrational, we have judges who can review them on appeal, and they will set it aside. We have protections built into this system. But what these cons who are pushing for tort reform want is a cap of $250,000 on pain and suffering, which means that no matter what, let's say your child is disabled at the age of 3, and you're going to have, and they're going to be on a ventilator for the next 50 years, they're going to require full, it's going to cost millions to care for this kid. Tough. You're out of luck. $250,000 is all you get. However, what they don't want to cap, and it amazes me how often this is not mentioned in the media, what they don't want to cap is financial income loss. You will find no discussion about this in the tort reform laws, and in fact, in those states where they have passed tort reform, like Texas, where you cannot sue a doctor for malpractice for more than $250,000. And it did not decrease the insurance, the malpractice insurance premiums. In fact, they just went up again in Texas. Because the reality is that this is about 0.1% of the total cost of the whole medical industry is paid out in malpractice lawsuits. It's insignificant. What this is all about is protecting the insurance companies. But what they don't want to cap is income. In other words, if you're somebody who earns $40,000 a year and you are disabled by medical malpractice, then you can get your $250,000 pain and suffering, and you might be able to get $40,000 a year, or say half of that, for the rest of your life. That'll be the limit of what you can get. But if you're somebody who makes $20 million a year, say you're the head of Pfizer, for example, and you make millions of dollars a year, and you're disabled by medical malpractice, you got that cap of $250,000 on pain and suffering, but your $20 million a year income, you can sue for that and you can get it. So what this whole tort reform scam is about is that what's going to happen is when somebody comes into the hospital, the question is going to be, is this a rich person or not? Because if it's a rich person and we screw up, or we assign to them the alcoholic doctor or the drug addicted doctor or the neophyte doctor or the guy who keeps screwing things up, if we assign that doctor to him, we're going to have to pay out big. But if it's a poor person or an unemployed person or a housewife who doesn't have an, quote, income, then we can just assign that person to them, because the most liability we are going to face is $250,000 because of the cap. Tort reform is protection for the rich and screw everybody else. That's the bottom line of it, period. Let's take a few phone calls. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Tim in Peoria, Illinois, on the line. Hey, Tim, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. Thanks again for the daily dose of sanity.
You're welcome.
My wife and I yesterday were at the Democracy Now! Rally in Columbus.
Great. Give us an update.
It would be nice to.
Yeah.
Since the mainstream news media completely ignores it, I thought it would be nice to have a firsthand account.
Yes. Please do so.
And I have written something to that effect.
Yeah, but rather than reading it, I'd like you to just tell us what happened.
Okay. What happened is that there was not a really huge crowd, and it was about 400 people, but it was intense. The inspiration was big. It was meaningful. This was a crowd, but angry, but resolute people, many blacks who'd fought endless righteous battles before as minorities, in a nation scarred with horrible injustices.
Yeah.
These people gathered in Columbus for yet another uphill struggle.
We were proud to be with them.
We stood behind Jesse Jackson, Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones, Green Party candidate David Cobb, and many others who talked about the most serious of all threats ongoing in this country, the theft of our election system and the loss of our democracy because of that theft. And many of them said it is the biggest story in America. It is the most important issue of our time, and yet it is ignored by the mainstream news media.
Yeah, Tim, was there any media there? Were there any reporters there?
There was a bank of television cameras, and I saw maybe a couple people who appeared to be reporters wandering through the audience.
Yeah. Did you see any coverage of this on any of the networks last night, or any mention?
I did not. And I also looked today for what was said in the Columbus Dispatch, the newspaper there, and I found nothing in the online edition.
Yeah.
I did see a short video on Channel 10 in Ohio that's on the internet today, and it just has it's very short. It just has a statement from Jesse Jackson.
Right. Okay.
He rattled off a very long list of voting oddities that, in his words, show a clear pattern of fraud.
Yeah.
That resulted in the theft of the election. The inaudible electronic voting machines, no paper trail, no transparency, partisan manipulation of the election process by Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell.
Yeah.
Widespread voter suppression in numerous black and Democratic-dominated precincts. Uncounted ballots. What Reverend Jackson described as inexplicable, statistically impossible discrepancies between exit polls and final tallies. And David Cobb was great. He took the podium, and he was really, really passionate.
Yeah, David's a good guy.
Right. He urged people to fight back and help wake up Americans and their leaders in Congress. And in his words, quote, "The most dangerous threat to democracy right now is the fact that so many people don't know it is almost gone," end quote.
Yeah.
And Tub Jones was great, too. She railed against the Cleveland Plain Dealer, which said she would be, quote, "making a fool of herself if on Thursday she challenges Congress's certification of the Ohio Electoral College vote and demands a full investigation into the irregularities."
Yeah, so you've got the local newspapers even editorializing it. This is outrageous.
Exposure of the fraud of those and those responsible for
it
before Ohio's electoral votes are certified.
Yeah, Tim. Tim, thank you. We're out of time. Thanks for the report, though. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you much. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
Female killer whales spend decades as grandmothers, and biologists wonder why. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Female killer whales tend to outlive their male counterparts by at least 30 years. The males usually die after they've passed their peak reproductive age, but female whales can live up to 50 years after they've stopped having calves. This dramatic gap in life expectancy has scientists wondering if grandmothers have a special function in social groups of killer whales. Linda Jones is a marine mammal expert with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Seattle. Jones says male killer whales mature around the age of 15 and they die in their 20s. But the females live much longer, and they live long after their prime reproductive years have come to an end.
Females mature at about 13 to 15 years. At about 40 years, they no longer reproduce. but they're females that are over 90 years old, so they can live a very long time in this post-reproductive phase. Why would a society have these post-reproductive females? What do they contribute to the population?
One possible explanation is that these grandmothers help raise the young. Jones says post-reproductive females in other species fill that role, but this has not been studied with killer whales. People don't know for sure why the grandmother whales stick around for so long, but Jones says it's important to figure that out. Some populations of killer whales are declining. She says the old females might provide clues about how pods of killer whales function and survive. That information might help people do a better job of protecting these marine mammals. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Spike in Easton, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Spike, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom.
What's
good
up?
To talk to you again.
Thank you.
Calling a response to that letter from the Ralph Nader voter.
Yeah.
I just want to make a few quick points if I can. I know you're a little pressed on time here.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm 25 years old. I voted twice for president, both times for Ralph Nader. So I get a little offended sometimes when I'm referred to as a fool. The biggest problem with the Democratic Party is I have asthma, and they only talk about health care every 4 years. And if they really want us to vote for them, they can't say, oh, this isn't an election year. We can't talk about health care. Wait in 4 years, we'll promise you something that we'll never deliver.
Spike, you really think that Dennis Kucinich only talks about health care every 4 years?
Well, why didn't Dennis Kucinich get the nomination? Instead, the guy that Fox News gave very positive coverage until Howard Dean yelled at got the nomination in Democratic Party because
but here's,
he had the money.
Here's the point. Here's the point, Spike. If there were more Dennis Kuciniches in the Democratic Party would be talking about health care reform 365 days a year, constantly. And the only way that you're going to get more Dennis Kuciniches in the Democratic Party is if you and I get involved. There's no way that Ralph Nader is going to win. There's no way. I mean, you know, look at what happened. Ain't going to happen. And
well,
so, you know, you threw away a vote. You gave a vote to Bush. I won't say you're a fool, but I'd say that you acted foolishly. I voted for Ralph Nader 4 years ago. I acted foolishly. Okay, I'll own up to that. But the reality is that we have a two-party system in the United States. We don't have proportional representation, and we don't yet have instant runoff voting. And so really the only option we have is the same option that Pat Robertson and the right-wing cranks had 20 years ago, which is to take over a major political party. And taking over the Greens ain't going to do it. They're not winning elections.
There's a lot of problems with the Greens, especially that as much as Cobb is a good guy, I think when I saw him in the independent party presidential debates on C-SPAN this year, he was more or less saying almost verbatim the exact same thing Nader was saying, just in his own voice.
Well, Cobb's a great guy. David Cobb's actually a friend of mine. I had him on this program. I absolutely support the Green Party on the local level, and I encourage people to join both the Green Party and the Democratic Party. Infiltrate the Democratic Party from within. And at the national level, right now, we've got to be voting for Democrats and progressive Democrats. We need more Dennis Kuciniches in the House of Representatives and the Senate.
And real quick, the other problem the Democratic Party has is they look at the country by color-coded maps, and this is the biggest mistake. We aren't red states or blue states. We should be human, first and foremost, human beings and Americans.
I absolutely agree with you, Spike. And again, I'd say the only way that we're going to change the Democratic Party from that kind of behavior is if we get inside it and take it over and become a power block and an influencer within it. And that's what we need to be doing.
And also, just real quick, I just wish that instead of spending all that money to fight Nader, the Democrats maybe would have campaigned more in places like South Carolina.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. Spike, we're out of time. But good points made. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Now, that's me, Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
On Monday, United Airlines said it reached tentative agreements with two unions representing its workers. The bankrupt airline is seeking ratification of a contract with the Transport Workers Union and the Professional Airline Flight Control Association by Thursday. The airline is attempting to impose pay cuts on nearly 8,500 employees in an attempt to save $112 million a year. The two unions involved in Monday's agreement only represent 195 members. Last Thursday, the flight attendants threatened that if pay cuts are imposed, they will strike. In addition, the airline has yet to reach agreements with unions representing mechanics and ramp workers. A bankruptcy court hearing that will determine the fate of United's plan to invalidate existing contracts is scheduled to start on Friday.
Nurses on strike at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are headed back to the bargaining table after 21 days on strike. The UFCW's Ed Finkelstein told Workers Independent News by cell phone that new talks will happen this week.
The federal mediator just announced minutes ago that the nurses and the hospital will be going back into negotiations this coming Friday. The union is hopeful that they'll have serious negotiations, meaningful negotiations.
Finkelstein says the union hopes these talks will be productive.
If they do what happened before, then it'll be a short negotiation. But we're being optimistic at this point that the hospital will come back into meaningful negotiations.
Finkelstein says solidarity among striking nurses is strong and that there's been an outpouring of community support for their strike. Over the weekend at a Rams home game, striking nurses collected coats and other items for indigent St. Louis area people and also for tsunami relief. Finkelstein says key issues in the strike don't revolve around money, but instead around patient care.
Employees at New York City's 311 helpline are calling for assistance against what organizers call a vicious anti-union campaign. Labor organizers for the Communication Workers of America, Local 1180, are alleging that King Teleservices, a private company that handles some of the calls on the line, has been trying to prevent attempts by employees to unionize. While company management says they have not been practicing intimidation, a memo was circulated in December that strongly urged employees to not sign any union petitions or cards. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 37 companies are now featured on WashTech's offshore tracker. Located at techsunite.org, the tracker keeps track of jobs that have been lost due to offshoring. Between the beginning of 2000 and the end of 2004, more than 300,000 jobs have been sent out of the United States, resulting in an estimated 154,000 jobs lost. The tracker also monitors where those jobs are going. The most recent update of 20,000 jobs sent offshore includes countries like Russia, Ghana, Honduras, and of course, India and China.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
When challenged directly by a crowd of America's troops about the Bushites' ongoing damnable failure to provide adequate armor for our soldiers, Pentagon Chief Donnie Rumsfeld was momentarily speechless. As the crowd murmured, Rummy said, "Now settle down, settle down. Hell, I'm an old man. It's early in the morning, and I'm gathering my thoughts here." If any of the Bushites need clarity on the scandalous way they treat our soldiers, they need only visit Army Specialist Robert Loria of Middletown, New York. Last February, he was in one of Rumsfeld's unprotected Humvees when it was hit by a roadside bomb in Iraq. Loria's left hand and forearm were blasted off and shrapnel ripped through his body. He spent months in rehab trying to learn how to live without a hand. Finally, just before this Christmas, he was due to be released and return home when he was hit with another bomb. Rumsfeld's Pentagon presented Loria with a bill for $1,700, claiming he had erroneously received family separation pay while in rehab, plus travel expenses connected to his treatment. Also, they billed him for some of the Humvee parts damaged in the bombing that tore off his hand. Loria was devastated, but the Army brass didn't care, demanding payment before they would release him. Hello, the Halliburtons rip off billions from us taxpayers, but the Pentagon is hounding the grunts. It's almost like I'm being abandoned, Loria said. Like, you did your job for us and now you're no use. That's how it feels. Is that clear enough for you, Mr. Rumsfeld? Thanks to press coverage and intervention by some members of Congress, Loria's nightmarish treatment by the Pentagon has finally ended. The Army was forced to clear Loria's hokey debt and send him home. This is Jim Hightower saying, but why should a soldier who's made such an extreme sacrifice be treated so shabbily in the first place? And how many others are getting the same back of the hand?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, corporate America has a message for you. Welcome back, by the way, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Our schools continue to be, writes William L. Bainbridge. Perhaps I should preface this by pointing out he's writing in the Columbus Dispatch, Ohio's greatest online newspaper, the Columbus Dispatch, that William Bainbridge is the president and chief executive officer of SchoolMatch, a Columbus, Ohio-based educational auditing research and data firm. He says, well, data indicate that schools continue to be one of the most secure environments for our children. Okay, then what's the problem? Well, they're also a profit opportunity, of course. Anyhow, he says, the lessons of Columbine High School and other tragedies underscore the importance of safety measures. Right, okay, Columbine High School, let's see. First of all, we should be asking, what role did antidepressant drugs play in Columbine? We know that at least one of these two kids, and perhaps both of them, were on antidepressants. And today we learn that people on antidepressants are more likely to behave in, shall we say, less than social fashion. But let's say there's some truth to this, that the lessons of Columbine are that we have to make our school more secure. Secure against what? Well, secure against, I would think, guns, right? But what this guy is promoting, he says, perhaps the most encouraging technological innovation is the radio frequency identification device, or RFID. These systems automatically record the exact time a student enters or exits a school. In other words, it's like these little tags that they put on things on clothes in stores. They can be read from up to 30 feet away, so you don't have to, like, walk. You know, kids don't even know they're being scanned. You can tell exactly when they walk into the classroom, exactly when they walk out, exactly when they come to school, exactly when they leave. Each RFID has its own unique number, so you can track every single student. Now, you know, you could argue that if you wanted to have a system that told you whether or not somebody was playing hooky or whether a kid was chronically late for class, and you didn't trust the teachers, or if you wanted to have a system to keep control of the teachers or something like that, that this might be something that you could look at. I think it's nuts, frankly. In fact, I think it's leaping, not stepping into 1984. This is leaping into George Orwell's world. But you could argue that if the goal was to keep track of where kids are in the school and at what time, that there might be some possible benefit in that. But what does that have to do with Columbine High School? What does that have to do with kids bringing guns to school? The devices that track the RFID chips don't tell you whether there's other metal on the body. They don't tell you what their intent is. And yet, not only is this being sold to parents here in this article in the Columbus Dispatch, he says it has the greatest potential to increase safety, right? At the last sentence of the paragraph. The ID chips can be attached to book bags or other personal items. Scanners can read the tags from a distance of 30 feet. But here he points out the suburban Houston Spring Branch Board of Education, for example, has appropriated $180,000 to use the technology to track the arrivals and departures of the district's 28,000 students. Isn't this great? $180,000. Corporate America has figured out another way to make money off our schools and to bring us one step closer to the Stalinesque state where everybody goes, you know, where everybody knows where to be and when to be there and is only in where they're supposed to be. And if you're not in the right place at the right time, somebody will come up and say, "May I see your papers, please?" We have this being promoted in our schools at the same time that we have national ID cards being promoted by members of Congress. They call them other things, right? Standardization of driver's licenses, standardization of identification. I find it interesting, too, that liberals and progressives are just as upset about this as are true conservatives. This is creeping fascism, my friends. And again, it comes back to, you know, we cannot be complacent. We cannot just sit back and say, government will take care of itself. Not when you've got corporate predators standing at the edge, ready to hand out their money. As our quote from President Theodore Roosevelt from 1906 points out, Teddy Roosevelt, 1906, the Republican Roosevelt, as president, said, and I quote, our quote for the day, "Behind the ostensible government sits enthroned an invisible government, owing no allegiance and acknowledging no responsibility to the people." Now, what might that invisible government be? "To destroy this invisible government," writes Roosevelt, or said Roosevelt, "to befoul the unholy alliance between corrupt business and corrupt politics is the first task of the statesmanship of today." I'll bet there's not 20 members of the House of Representatives and 10 in the Senate who believe that at this moment. And that's the tragedy of American politics, and that is only going to be changed if you and I start getting active. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Our website, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into the chat room, click the live chat button. There's a message board there as well where you can post and read messages, thousands of them, tens of thousands of them, actually. Let's take a few phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Alice in Humboldt County, California, on the line. Hey, Alice, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
I very much appreciate all your thinking.
Thank you.
If Congress does throw out Ohio's delegates, would that bring in the Democratic delegates? Also, who is hiding the exit polls from Ohio?
The exit polls are being hidden by corporate America, number one, to answer your question. And there's a website in New Zealand, scoop.nz, that has actually published them. They gathered them when they were, you know, public information for a brief period of time. And the redshift is really quite remarkable. According to the exit polls, by pretty much the exact same margins that happened in the Ukraine, John Kerry won this election over George Bush by several points, just like Yushchenko beat his opponent in the Ukraine by several points. Those exit polls, though, are a tightly guarded secret held by the news media in the United States. And it's no coincidence, in my opinion, frankly, that the news media who own these exit polls, who commissioned them and own them, are included among them companies which are, for example, GE, which owns NBC, MSNBC, one of the largest defense contractors in the country. I don't need to go through the list. These companies, they all have interlocking boards of directors. Their interests lie with the Republican Party, which is willing to roll over and go for more corporate mergers, more corporate media, less oversight and regulation of the media, of the press, less suggestion that we, the people, should have some say in these matters. That's what's going on, and that's who's got it. Alice, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. It's always great to hear from you. Thank you. Thank you for listening. You're welcome. Thank you for listening to us there in Humboldt County. Barbara in Chicago is on the line. Hey, Barbara, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Really like the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I first heard you when you substituted for Randy on Air America.
Oh, she's wonderful, isn't she?
Oh, yeah, she's great. But, yeah, I like her, and I like your style, too.
Thank you.
I just have one comment to make that I picked up from George Lakoff. The big push for the tort reform, especially from the Republicans, is that it's going to defund the Democratic Party.
Yeah, that's it. That's a major side benefit for the Republicans. Yeah,
it sure is. This to them is just the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
You know, so when you say the rest of us, we all have to start getting involved. If this goes through, you know, we're going to have to start, you know, putting in more money. But yeah, I think that's their ultimate goal. They just want to, you know, they want to. Take away the funds from the Democratic candidates.
You know, Barbara, it's interesting to watch the evolution of this, because back in the 80s, after Jimmy Carter's defeat and Ronald Reagan's ascendancy, and Reagan came into office on corporate money, so much so, particularly the oil industry, so much so that his first official act of office was to remove Jimmy Carter's solar panels from the roof of the White House and roll back all that legislation that Carter had proposed that was going to make us independent of Middle Eastern oil within 20 years. And Carter was moving us in that direction quite aggressively, and it would have worked. I mean, the math is there. This is not rocket science. And Reagan came in and began his war on organized labor, you know, busting up PATCO. When Reagan became president, 25% of the United States workforce was unionized. Which meant for every union job, there's another job that has roughly equal benefits, which meant that about 50% of American workers were able to raise a family, put their kids through school, have all their medical expenses covered, you know, good benefits, and even have a pension for their old age. Now we're down to about 7 or 8% of the private workforce in the United States. And I think it's 11 or 12, maybe 13% if you include all the federal and state employees. And Bush wants to privatize 700,000 to 800,000 of the federal employees in the process. You know, there's been this major effort by the conservatives to destroy the unions. And one of the reasons why has been that the unions traditionally were a major, if not the major, source of revenue for the Democratic Party.
Yep.
The second major source of revenue for the Democratic Party has been, as you correctly point out, the trial lawyers. And because they basically, the unions and the trial lawyers defend the little guy. They're the ones who are there for working people. If you're injured on the job, the trial lawyers will help you out. If you're having, you know, if you're being harmed in some way on the job in a way that doesn't involve litigation but involves collective bargaining, you're not being paid right, that sort of thing, the unions are there to help you out. The Republicans don't want anybody helping you out because they want corporate rule in this country, and they're moving very quickly toward it. And what's interesting, though, to me, the reason why I am not in utter despair about this, number one, I think it's possible that if we educate enough people quickly enough, because people are starting to wake up to this, UFCW is doing great organizing, campaigns against Walmart and things. If we wake up enough people quickly enough, number one, we might have a union movement back. Number two, the whole tort reform thing might blow up in these guys' faces. But even if both don't happen, even if things stay where they are, or even if they cut the trial lawyers' revenue and thus their ability to donate, Howard Dean has demonstrated that with the Internet, with this decentralized Internet, it's still possible for Democrats to raise money. And if the Democratic Party moves in the direction of progressive politics and populist politics, in the Ralph Nader direction, frankly, to pick up the theme from the last hour, and becomes the voice of the people as they were in the 30s and 40s and 50s and even the early 60s, if they do that again, or throughout the 60s, actually, with LBJ, if they do that again, I don't think that they're going to have to worry about money from trial lawyers or from the unions, although it would be wonderful to see the protections afforded Americans by unionization and by trial lawyers to continue. I mean, we must have them. We need more. We need greater unionization, and we need more tort protections. But from the Democratic Party's point of view, they need to wake up and figure out that they can still survive. They don't have to worry about this. Thanks for the call, Barbara.
Bye-bye.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartmann program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartmann.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor.
Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. I just discovered we have four ham radio operators in our chat room, or so I'm told. Or maybe it's just four hams. I'm an old ham radio operator. WA8MWL. Although I forgot to renew my license, so I think it's expired. Anyhow, 25 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, TomHartman.com, the website, if you want to drop into our chat room, which is a well-filled, great conversation, moving quickly along. Particularly interesting, the thoughts on the Teamsters. Anyhow, Ellen Ratner is with us. It's Talk Radio News Service. Time for our daily report from Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. You know, we do like to report to you on the news, but we also like to give you a little local color when we can.
Okay.
And today's local color is when one of our hosts that I'm on with every day, Mark Bernier and Victoria Jones and I, went up to get our photos taken for the inauguration, because this year they're being, quote-unquote, strict in security. Now, mind you, our photographs are already in the Capitol Hill database. They're already in the Secret Service database. And the Secret Service and Capitol Hill police have gotten together to yet take another set of pictures, yours, taxpayer money at work, and fingerprints, although if you have White House credentials, they told us later, you don't have to be fingerprinted. But the fact is that they took two sets of pictures for us today because they can't even get their two computers to talk to each other. And these people are in charge of Homeland Security. It is, one, a waste of taxpayer money. Two, they can't even, one is for a pre-inaugural credential so that you can set up your equipment. The other is for an inaugural credential. Like, right. You can't have one credential for two things.
Right.
Like, they can't take one picture and use it. And thirdly, Victoria's and my photographs are already in their permanent database.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is, and somehow we are now spending $800 million or so for a new building for Homeland Security so everybody can be in one space. These picture takers were in one space, and they can't even talk to each other 2 feet away.
Yeah. Yeah, this identifies a problem, shall we say.
I mean,
and
it's,
you know,
not, it doesn't behoove us well to catch terrorists.
Yeah, and you know, what's interesting about this, Ellen, is that people on the right, the cons, would say, here's an example of bloated government. This is big government being incompetent. Your tax dollars are being wasted. And liberals would say, this is an example of big government not being efficient. And now the conservative solution would be, why don't you privatize this or do away with it? The liberal solution, I would say, or at least my solution would be, you know, why don't we work for greater transparency, which will force efficiency? This is, as long as they can, you know, government is just like any other institution. They're gonna try and cover up their problems. And the Bush administration has been the least transparent administration probably in the history of the United States. And I think we need to force greater transparency so we can see what's going on here.
Well, I'd like greater transparency. I would just like the two computers in the same agency to talk to each other.
Yeah.
So that, one, we're not wasting government money, but two, how are we simply going to coordinate these supposed terrorists coming into the country if you can't coordinate a bunch of press people and their credentials?
They have the same problem. The immigration department at the airports is pulling one fingerprint. The FBI has 10 fingerprints, and they can't match each other's databases. So, you know, the people being fingerprinted coming into the country doesn't match up with the FBI database. Anyway, we've got about a half a minute left. Anything else happening in Washington?
I think the other big news is Social Security. The White House has said now that people who are near retirement will not lose or have a reduction of benefits. But guess what? They won't define what near retirement is. When we pressed them at the press this morning, they would not define what it is, what they mean by years or age. So there you have it.
Oh, my goodness. Yep. Yep. When the conservatives start talking about pocketbook issues, it's time to guard your pocketbook. That's the bottom line here. Ellen, thanks so much for the call and the update.
You're welcome.
Great to hear from you. Talk Radio News Service, Ellen Radner. It's 29 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've supported her through every accomplishment in her life.
Cross, pull, I tied my shoes.
While your ultimate goal is to teach her to stand on her own.
Let go, I can do it.
There are things she just can't do without your support.
There were drugs and alcohol at the party.
Talk with the teens in your life. And if they're in substance abuse treatment and recovery, support them. Help them turn the hardest thing they've ever done into their greatest accomplishment. For information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
On Monday, United Airlines said it reached tentative agreements with two unions representing its workers. The bankrupt airline is seeking ratification of a contract with the Transport Workers Union and the Professional Airline Flight Control Association by Thursday. The airline is attempting to impose pay cuts on nearly 8,500 employees in an attempt to save $112 million a year. The two unions involved in Monday's agreement only represent 195 members. Last Thursday, the flight attendants threatened that if pay cuts are imposed, they will strike. In addition, the airline has yet to reach agreements with unions representing mechanics and ramp workers. A bankruptcy court hearing that will determine the fate of United's plan to invalidate existing contracts is scheduled to start on Friday.
Nurses on strike at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are headed back to the bargaining table after 21 days on strike. The UFCW's Ed Finkelstein told Workers Independent News by cell phone that new talks will happen this week.
The federal mediator just announced minutes ago that the nurses and the hospital will be going back into negotiations this coming Friday. The union is hopeful that they'll have serious negotiations, meaningful negotiations.
Finkelstein says the union hopes these talks will be productive.
If they do what happened before, then it'll be a short negotiation, but we're being optimistic at this point that the hospital will come back into meaningful negotiations.
Finkelstein says solidarity among striking nurses is strong and that there's been an outpouring of community support for their strike. Over the weekend at a Rams home game, striking nurses collected coats and other items for indigent St. Louis area people and also for tsunami relief. Finkelstein says key issues in the strike don't revolve around money, but instead around patient care.
Employees at New York City's 311 helpline are calling for assistance against what organizers call a vicious anti-union campaign. Labor organizers for the Communication Workers of America, Local 1180, are alleging that King Teleservices, a private company that handles some of the calls on the line, has been trying to prevent attempts by employees to unionize. While company management says they have not been practicing intimidation, a memo was circulated in December that strongly urged employees to not sign any union petitions or cards. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 37 companies are now featured on WashTech's offshore tracker. Located at techsunite.org, the tracker keeps track of jobs that have been lost due to offshoring. Between the beginning of 2000 and the end of 2004, more than 300,000 jobs have been sent out of the United States, resulting in an estimated 154,000 jobs lost. The tracker also monitors where those jobs are going. The most recent update of 20,000 jobs sent offshore includes countries like Russia, Ghana, Honduras, and of course, India and China.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I was born with a raging fire.
thirst, a hunger to be free.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. TomHartman.com gets you to the chat room. No, that Morse code that I was sharing with you a few minutes ago was nothing obscene. No need to get the archives and send them off to the FCC. Although it does raise an interesting question. If it had been obscene, would that be, you know, would they do a Howard Stern on me? You know, could I be getting fined if I had, you know, da-da-da-da? Well, no, I'm not even going to do it. Not even going to do it. I learned Morse. It's amazing. It's still with me. I learned Morse code when I was 12 years old. I got my my first ham license, my novice license when I was 12. Got my general when I was 13. Had to at that time you had to know Morse code 20 words per minute, and I can probably still copy around 10 or 15. Every now and then I've got a shortwave receiver upstairs, and every now and then I'll just go into the usually up in the 40 meter band. You can easily find tons of folks still doing CW, Morse code. Great fun. Apropos of nothing, electronic ID holding promise of safer schools. I want to segue from that into what the military is up to in our schools. But first, let's hear from Armin in Sarasota, Florida. Our telephone number, once again, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Armin, what's on your mind today?
I just had a proposal for consideration, something to think about.
All right.
Assuming that Bush is inaugurated.
It's a safe assumption, I think.
Imagine instead of all the hostile demonstrations, eggs, screaming, all the really bizarre outfits and such, although if that's what people feel makes a difference, I guess they can do it. But instead of all that, imagine 500,000 to a million posters, and they're all made up with tickets so that people can see them. Global media could witness this. And they all have the same picture of Bush where he's given the finger. You know, the one where he's got the suit on and he's given the finger. And then at the bottom of the
poster. I've seen it quite often.
Okay, at the bottom of the poster, you could leave it to where people could put their own individual issues, like fair trade, Dave's served in combat,
right,
health care reform,
right,
cheap drugs from Canada, on and on and on and on and on. The people could put their own issues, you know, there. And imagine that in unity. And,
that's an idea, Armin. That's an idea. Somebody ought to grab a web. There's probably a URL out there, something like, you know, BushGivesUsTheFinger.com or something like that. There's probably still available. And, you know, produce variations on this poster that you suggested and suggest. The problem is you try to put a poster up in Washington, D.C., you'll get shot by a sniper from the top of the White House. I mean, I'm exaggerating slightly, but it's not. Well, they're not gonna let anybody with anything that looks like a picket sign within a million mile within camera range. Last year, it's interesting. Last year, 4 years ago, rather, the last inaugural, Bush had to run his motorcade at almost 40 miles an hour down Pennsylvania Avenue, super fast, because the crowd was throwing eggs at him and screaming at him. And the media was on the flatbed truck ahead of him with their cameras, and only CNN played a small clip of that. None of the network news stations, none of the ABC, CBS, NBC, none of them showed the footage of Bush having to hide in his car, duck, and run into the enclave near the White House for the inaugural. None of them showed that. The outrage of hundreds of thousands of Americans lining that parade route and throwing eggs and shouting obscenities at him. This time it's not going to happen because the Secret Service is going to be there, and they're going to carefully vet in the name of security, right? This is going to be just like his campaign
events. Well, that's
fine. And therefore the campaign is to turn your back on Bush. To show up looking like a Republican, and when he drives by, turn your back on him.
I think that's sort of an interesting proposal, but I think that picture on a picket, you know, a big poster size of him.
But I'm telling you, you walk out of the train station in Washington D.C. with a picket sign, they will stop you. I mean, they're just not going to allow any picket signs anywhere near the White House.
Well, they can't stop the people from legally and lawfully going a fair distance away. 500,000 people. Why do they have to be in Bush's face? Why can't they be demonstrating? Okay,
they stop them all the time, Armin. They stop them all the time, number one. And number two, you had this incredible, this historically huge demonstration in Washington, D.C. the day before the Republican National Convention, as many as 500,000 people out, and it got virtually no coverage. Virtually no coverage. I mean, you've got the press right now is so afraid. You know, one of the vice presidents of CBS made a pilgrimage to Washington, D.C. yesterday or the day before to bow down and apologize to George W. for that nasty report that Dan Rather did. They are so terrified of losing access to the White House or of being punished.
Tom.
Yeah.
Tom, do you really believe in your heart that they're intimidated by Bush? I absolutely disagree. I think that's the biggest cover story they're trying to sell to people that are in naivety. I think that they're so integrated in the financing of this criminal enterprise that they can't turn back because they could all implicate themselves.
Yeah, well, I'll give you that. At the level of the boardroom, I agree with you. At the level of the boardroom.
Well,
who do you think
runs it? It's top down. Everything's top down.
Yes and no. Because what happens is at the bottom, you know, I've been in news organizations, and I can tell you, it doesn't matter. The CEO is not signing the check, first of all.
He's the boss. He can get you fired in a heartbeat.
Sure, but you're missing a point. These are large bureaucratic organizations. Here's the bottom line. Let me make my point here, Armin.
Okay.
Here's the bottom line. You've got a reporter who is making a good salary, has a good job with a large organization, wants that job. You know, they want to raise their kids, have their family. They want job security. They want to climb the ladder. And their ability to do their job, their ability to survive as a reporter depends as certainly you make a point. It does to some level depend on, you know, doing things the way their company wants it done. But more important than that, frankly, if you're on the White House beat, your job security depends on whether or not the president will ever call on you in a press conference, on whether or not your questions will get answered, on whether or not the president is willing to sit down with your network and do an interview. Because if they're not, if the White House boycotts you or your network, you're out of business. And the White House, this Bush White House is the first White House in history to use the threat of access or the loss of access as a way of terrifying the individual reporters so that the CEO of NBC or CBS or ABC doesn't have to say anything to those people at the ground.
Well, that may be, but I still think it's ultimately the media is not liberal. It's truthfully, it's bottom line conservatism, and it's centrally controlled ultimately, and all these other things that you are talking about have dimensions and degrees, but ultimately it's centralized and it's top down and it's the guys at the top. It's the bottom line. If you mess with their bottom line, they don't care who's below. Some heads are going to roll.
There you go.
And you can sit here and say what Bush is doing to the media. Let me tell you something. In my opinion, in my observation of the internet while still free, Bush is 10 to 20 times slimier than Clinton ever was, and they just totally took Clinton and they pulled him apart in 1,000 pieces when he turned towards the common middle class and the weight of his
absolutely, Armin. And when Clinton came into office, there were 4 active investigations against the Bush-Reagan administration, any one of which could have led to, if they had happened fully back when Reagan was still president, could have led to impeachment, and any 4 of which could have led to prison terms. Reagan pardoned 6 people who were facing criminal actions in his administration. More people were convicted of felonies during the Reagan administration than any other administration in history. And there's no doubt in my mind that if there wasn't a broad consensus that Reagan was already had Alzheimer's, he would have been impeached, or he could have been impeached. A friend of mine sat in on the deposition of Reagan around Iran-Contra when I think it was 168 times he said, "I don't remember." And it became increasingly clear that he genuinely didn't. He had lost it. He was not there. But I think if he had been there, there's a good chance he would have been impeached in his second term. And Clinton came in, and he had the ability in his first weeks in office to take these investigations, which were already ongoing. Lawrence Walsh had just an incredibly juicy, you know, the whole Iran-Contra thing, even the part leading back to the possibility that George Bush Sr. had helped rig the Ayatollah hanging on to the hostages in Iran in order to so that Reagan could beat Jimmy Carter. I mean, that investigation was still ongoing when Bill Clinton became president. And these four investigations, these four criminal investigations of criminal activity that all led back to Bush Sr. and Reagan personally. And Bill Clinton decided to drop those investigations. And he decided to drop those investigations because he thought that if he did that, that the Republicans would be so grateful that they would go along with him on trying to reform health care and his other social agendas. How naive. I mean, he was an outsider. He wasn't a Washington insider. He had no idea how corrupt and how venal and how evil the Republican Party in Washington, D.C. had become. The Tom DeLay-ism, the newtification of Congress. He just had no idea. He had no clue of the people he was dealing with. And I don't know how I got off on that, but anyhow, Armin, thanks for the call. It's always good to hear from you, and you always raise interesting topics. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. I mentioned to you that there is a push on now to do as the suburban Houston Spring Branch Board of Education did, and that is to appropriate hundreds of thousands of dollars for every school district in America to get RFID tags, radio frequency identification tags, and sew them into the clothing of kids or into their book bags or have them carry them somehow or perhaps implant them under their skin so that when they come into and leave the school, they can be tracked. Guess who's next? Right? And if these kids have these RFID tags and they are used to being tracked everywhere they go all the time, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, when they're no longer kids in school but they're people out in the workforce, do you think they're going to get real upset if the government says, well, let's just implant these chips in everybody? Let's have a safer society. Big Brother would like to watch you. I consider this evil. I got to say, I am right there with Ron Paul, the conservative member of Congress from Texas. In fact, I'd like to get him on this show one of these days and talk about this. And then we find this. The Baltimore Sun published this story. A few days before her holiday break, South River High School junior Emily Hawes took a 3-hour standardized test offered by military officials that suggests possible careers for students while helping to identify promising recruits. Hawes, 16, of Davidsonville, said she did not realize until the day of the exam that it had a military link. She said students were told not to go to the Edgewater School that morning if they didn't want to take the test called the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. Some parents are complaining that tests were scheduled during class time at some schools. Chris Arendt, the deputy director of accession policy at the Pentagon. Deputy director of accession policy? A-C-C-E-S-S-I-O-N. Accede to what? Accession policy at the Pentagon. They're already into Orwellian double. He says, this is actually a community service that the Department of Defense provides to help every generation of youth find where they fit in the world about them. Yes, isn't that sweet? In addition, the federal No Child Left Behind Act requires schools that receive federal funding to provide, this is from the Baltimore Sun article, to provide military recruiters with students' names, addresses, and phone numbers. This, of course, unless their parents opt out, which is a huge hassle, and most parents, frankly, don't even know they can do it. Now we have the military in our schools giving aptitude tests to our students to help them find what kind of job that they... Gee, you would be good at being an infantryman. You would be good at driving a truck. I'll bet you'd be good as a mechanic for tanks. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Humboldt County, California on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Tom, it's been a while. One of the things that I think is that history is going to judge us the people very harshly. They're going to be saying, how did you let this happen? How did you allow your wonderful country to fall into the hands of robber barons? And maybe they're going to say, why didn't you do this? And, you know, if there's anything that we could do that we're not seeing, that we will later ask, why didn't we?
Yeah, I agree. By the way, Narlodius points out my mispronunciation. It's accession. And Louise makes the point, instead of this being reported, we're getting a blow-by-blow on the tsunami, right, instead of these kinds of issues. It's like the tsunami is the greatest blessing that this administration could have had, and I think this is one of the reasons why they're playing it up. We're not finding out what's going on in Iraq. We're not hearing the news about, you know, all the backroom deals that are going on in Washington, D.C. We're not finding out the details of what's happening with Social Security. No serious examination is being done of the federal budget. Nobody's talking anymore about the trade deficit, the China trade deals, the union attempt, the attempts to unionize Walmart. All of this stuff is off the pages so that we can talk about the tsunami.
I don't put anything beyond these guys. You know, I know I've gotten myself thought of as a conspiracy theorist, but I'm convinced they were up to their neck in 9/11. I would have to ask, how did this happen right at such perfect timing? I don't suppose they could affect nature, but boy.
Yeah, well,
they would.
You know my opinion, and that is that it is gross incompetence combined with the Bush administration's desire to cover up their own embarrassing ties to the Saudi royal family, which left us vulnerable, and therefore I hold them responsible for 9/11.
And I see malicious intent at every point in this thing.
I know. And we respectfully disagree on that, but I'm willing to be convinced of your point of view, Dave.
I'd love to be convinced of yours, believe me.
There you go. Okay. We'll see where it goes. 10 minutes before the hour. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The differences between snowflakes are intriguing and important to scientists. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio.
It's said that no two snowflakes are alike, and photographer Pat Belling confirms it. Belling has taken pictures of snowflakes for the past 23 years. She first became interested after seeing a book of photographs by Wilson Bentley, a turn-of-the-century photographer. Belling, who works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, says the study of individual flakes goes back even further than Bentley. The renowned scientist Robert Hooke first observed and documented them under a rudimentary microscope in the 17th century. But Bentley's photographs of snowflakes made him famous, and his passion for documenting the differences between individual flakes intrigued scientists. Meteorologists have since learned that the shape of a snowflake depends on a number of factors. All snowflakes have six sides because of the way water molecules organize as they form ice crystals, but the way each snowflake turns out depends mostly on temperature and pressure. For example, Belling says the most intricate snowflakes form at higher humidity.
Depending on where it is in the cloud and the water vapor pressure as it goes dancing through the cloud and the temperature, it spreads out into all of its leafiness and the pretty complex pieces, or depending again on those conditions, it stays in just that hexagon. Sometimes it's a three-dimensional column, and then other times you get the pellets.
Snow enthusiasts like Belling know what shape snowflakes are going to be as soon as they step out into the cold. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Monty, this seems strange to me. The movies had that mummy thing, but nonsense has a welcome ring, and heroes don't come.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program today brought to you by the Organic Wine Company, EcoWine.com, or 1-888-ECO-WINE. Small Dog Electronics, SmallDog.com, and DemocraticMatch.com, where if I wasn't married to the most wonderful woman in the world, who has her hand on the power cord here. No, I'm just kidding. If I wasn't married to the most wonderful, I really am. 32 years. I'm so grateful to Louise for sticking around with me. If I wasn't married to her, I would be contacting democraticmatch.com, because there you can meet other folks like Louise, other liberals of the female persuasion if you're male, or vice versa. Anyhow, those are our sponsors today. Please consider patronizing our sponsors, as well as the sponsors whose advertising you hear on our local stations, the local sponsors, and let them know that you heard about them on the Tom Hartman radio program. It does help. It helps a lot. On January 20th, the ACLU notes on their website, on January 20th, George W. Bush will pledge to uphold the Constitution. The ACLU is broadly of the opinion that he is not upholding the Constitution, that he is instead tearing the Constitution down and apart. And I am inclined to definitely agree with them on that point. And their suggestion, therefore, is that, you know, we have to continue to do battle with these unconstitutional suggestions that keep coming out of the Bush administration. Things like, oh, let's throw out the Fourth Amendment right of privacy. Let's throw out the First Amendment right of free speech. Let's herd people into free speech zones where they can only speak if they say what we like. And on it goes. You know the battles that the ACLU has fought. Well, the ACLU is now involved in an attempt to raise their membership and their pledges. They've gotten 65,700 total signers so far. This is the time of year. CommonDreams.org is doing a fundraising drive. ACLU.org. I encourage you to participate in these things. Join these organizations. Help them out. This pledge. I pledge to join with over 400,000 ACLU members and supporters to help ensure that the president, his administration, and our leaders in Congress fulfill their duty to preserve, protect, and defend our Constitution. Very straightforward. Whether you agree or disagree with the parties the ACLU is defending, keep in mind the ACLU is now defending Rush Limbaugh, regardless of who what they're really defending is the Constitution, and that is absolutely, absolutely vital. Oh, you can also gaze or matched on democraticmatch.com, too. The chat room reminds me. See you later.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How could I have overlooked that?
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
On Monday, United Airlines said it reached tentative agreements with two unions representing its workers. The bankrupt airline is seeking ratification of a contract with the Transport Workers Union and the Professional Airline Flight Control Association by Thursday. The airline is attempting to impose pay cuts on nearly 8,500 employees in an attempt to save $112 million a year. The two unions involved in Monday's agreement only represent 195 members. Last Thursday, the flight attendants threatened that if pay cuts are imposed, they will strike. In addition, the airline has yet to reach agreements with unions representing mechanics and ramp workers. A bankruptcy court hearing that will determine the fate of United's plan to invalidate existing contracts is scheduled to start on Friday.
Nurses on strike at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are headed back to the bargaining table after 21 days on strike. The UFCW's Ed Finkelstein told Workers Independent News by cell phone that new talks will happen this week.
The federal mediator just announced minutes ago that the nurses and the hospital will be going back into negotiations this coming Friday. The union is hopeful that they'll have serious negotiations, meaningful negotiations.
Finkelstein says the union hopes these talks will be productive.
If they do what happened before, then it'll be a short negotiation. But we're being optimistic at this point that the hospital will come back into meaningful negotiations.
Finkelstein says solidarity among striking nurses is strong and that there's been an outpouring of community support for their strike. Over the weekend at a Rams home game, striking nurses collected coats and other items for indigent St. Louis area people and also for tsunami relief. Finkelstein says key issues in the strike don't revolve around money, but instead around patient care.
Employees at New York City's 311 helpline are calling for assistance against what organizers call a vicious anti-union campaign. Labor organizers for the Communication Workers of America, Local 1180, are alleging that King Teleservices, a private company that handles some of the calls on the line, has been trying to prevent attempts by employees to unionize. While company management says they have not been practicing intimidation, a memo was circulated in December that strongly urged employees to not sign any union petitions or cards. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 37 companies are now featured on WashTech's offshore tracker. Located at techsunite.org, the tracker keeps track of jobs that have been lost due to offshoring. Between the beginning of 2000 and the end of 2004, more than 300,000 jobs have been sent out of the United States, resulting in an estimated 154,000 jobs lost. The tracker also monitors where those jobs are going. The most recent update of 20,000 jobs sent offshore includes countries like Russia, Ghana, Honduras, and of course, India and China.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Home Depot is coming to my town, riding in on tracks of gold, courtesy of us taxpayers. This is not merely another of Home Depot's big box stores, mind you, but by gollies, a high-tech data center. To get the giant corporation to choose Austin, state and local officials approached it in the professional manner that corporations now expect. By frantically hurling huge sackfuls of taxpayers' money at them, desperately hoping that our sacks are fuller than those being hurled by other cities. In this case, our sacks contain more than $30 million, and, lucky us, Home Depot grabbed them. Our public officials are now peacocking around over this deal, bragging that they're delivering 500 jobs to we the people, averaging $58,000 a year in pay. Actually, though, you wouldn't get one paying $58,000. That average includes the salary, bonuses, and such of those up in the new data center's executive suite. Averages, you see, are tricksters. If you are paid $20,000, for example, and the top dog gets $200,000, you're averaging $110,000 each. Home Depot's package includes nearly $6 million in a special tax break from the Austin School District. Yes, that means $6 million that should go to the education of school kids will not, for district officials have given this corporation an exemption from paying its school taxes. Yet the Austin School Board is trying to pull a fast one on us by asserting that the state reimburses school districts for any revenue they lose when they dole out tax breaks to corporations. As one board member put it, there is no cost to the Austin taxpayer. Earth to school board. The Austin taxpayer is also a state taxpayer. The tax giveaway to Home Depot still comes from our pockets, and it's still $6 million that could have been added to education, but now won't be. This is Jim Hightower saying, Home Depot is super rich. Why shouldn't it pay its taxes like our homegrown businesses do?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
So is there no real difference between Bush and Kerry?
Except their personalities?
Well, I would dispute that. I would say that Kerry would not be cutting deals with polluters, at least at the level of Bush is. That Kerry would not be trying to dismantle Social Security because it's a socialist program, but instead would be trying to protect it. I would suggest we can just go on down the list, but nonetheless, I get this email from Michael Arnold, Nader voter.
There's no real difference between Bush or Kerry except their personalities. All right, and talk about it all you want, Tom. The real issue here is there's a one-party system.
Actually, no, the real problem, and this is one of the interesting things, is that we have a two-party system. And Ralph Nader did his best when he was campaigning. And I say this with respect for Ralph Nader and as someone who voted for Ralph Nader in the year 2000, but not in 2004. In the campaign of 2004, Ralph Nader did his best as he was going around campaigning to misinform people like poor Michael here in a most aggressive fashion. One of my kids heard one of his speeches at one of his many speeches at college campuses. I went online, found several transcripts of them. And he would say things like, I'm paraphrasing here, but the effect is the same. He would say things like, they have third parties and fourth parties and fifth parties in France. They have them in Israel. They have them in South Africa. Why can't we have them here in America? Why are the Democrats and the Republicans conspiring to keep me out? To keep out third-party candidates. And then he might throw in a gratuitous call for instant runoff voting. But he never bothered to point out to people that those other nations that he mentions so often in his stump speech actually have a different form of government than we do. They have something called proportional representation, which wasn't invented until 1861. John Stuart Mill wrote about it, where you vote for the party, and if say there's 100 seats in parliament, if your party gets 31% of the vote, you get 31 seats. And so it's possible to have dozens of parties, and they actually get represented. Whereas we in the United States, I mean, the founders did the best they could. They hadn't thought of this. They did the best they could. They came up with first-past-the-post, winner-take-all elections, whoever gets the majority of the vote, or even a plurality of the vote. Whoever gets the most votes wins. Just very simply. And James Madison saw the problem with this. He says that the big problem with this is that we may end up with a government where those who are running the government are actually minority candidates. They don't represent the majority viewpoint, which is not Democratic, or what would have been called Republican back then. And so what was his solution? His solution was to beg people not to form political parties. Please don't form political parties. You'll find this in Federalist Number 10. They called them factions. Please don't devolve into factions. Because if there's more than two factions, if there's more than two political parties, then you're going to end up consistently and repeatedly with a president or with elected representatives who represent minority interests, and that's not democratic. And it's happened many times in the United States. In fact, I'd say it's probably, I haven't done a number-by-number count, but I would guess that probably more of our presidents have been elected with less than 50% of the vote than have been elected with more than 50% of the vote. As a consequence, as a result of third-party candidates being on the ballot. Now, the solution to this, obviously, is one of two things. It's either to go with instant runoff voting or proportional representation. Proportional representation is going to require amending the Constitution, which, in my opinion, is a very bad and dangerous thing to do with Republicans in control, because they will get in there and they will tinker with other things and we'll never see an end to their mischief. For that matter, I'm not sure I would trust the Democrats to amend the Constitution. But instant runoff voting is something that can be done on a local basis. It can be done on a state-by-state basis. And since even our federal elections are actually conducted at the state level with state election apparatus in control, it must be done on a state-by-state basis. And it is being done on the largest municipality I know of right now is San Francisco, has instant runoff voting, where you would vote for John Kerry is your first choice, Ralph Nader, or let's say Ralph Nader is your first choice, John Kerry is your second choice. And if Nader didn't get a certain threshold of votes, and there was and nobody got over 50%, then they'd say, okay, all the Nader votes default to whatever the second choice was. For most people, the second choice would be Kerry, not Bush. And so those Nader votes then become Kerry votes, for example. The advantage of this is that third-party candidates can get out there, can campaign, can be very active. They're actually welcomed and embraced by the other parties, as we see in Australia and New Zealand that have national instant runoff voting. Well, welcome and embraced is perhaps a leap, but you get the point. Tolerated. I mean, no politician likes competition, right? That's the bottom line. But nonetheless, the point is that that the message gets out. All the voices are heard. But Ralph Nader went out of his way to obscure that and make it seem like there was some sort of corporatist conspiracy. And I'll be the first to tell you, there is a corporatist conspiracy, but it's a little different than this. That there was some sort of conspiracy between the Democrats and Republicans for there only to be one party. Well, yeah, they, you know, the Democrats and Republicans both, by and large, at the national level, oppose instant runoff voting. Why? They don't want to see the rise of third parties. They don't want to lose their power. That's why we have to get involved. You and me, at the local level. Show up at the Democracy for America meetup. They're the first Wednesday of every month. democracyforamerica.com will get you the information. Show up at join your local Green Party. Join your local Democratic Party. The Green Parties are the most active and aggressive in pushing for instant runoff voting. God bless them. They're doing great. They now have instant runoff voting in over 250 communities and areas in the United States. I mean, this is very significant. But there is some reality to this notion of, well, there's really only one. Here, the GOP, the House GOP, has reversed course on their ethics rules. Right? They're not going to let Tom DeLay keep his position if he gets indicted. So what they'll do is they'll strip him of the title, but he'll continue to hold the power. I mean, that's how it's going to work, right? Which is what brought me back around to all of this. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I have to tell you what our elected officials can do. USA Today did a great story on this day. I want to share some of these details with you, how they can enrich themselves. First, let's hear from Alan in Virginia. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Yes, I called my senator, Senator Sessions' office before the election and tried to tell him about the voting machines. And the lady who answered the phone told me that they do have a paper trail. And that kind of contradicts what I've heard.
Did you vote on an electronic voting machine, Alan?
Oh, no, I did.
So you don't, you haven't seen. Well, the reality is that they don't. She's misinformed. What she might be talking about is the fact that at the end of the day, after all the votes have been, you know, say 500 people go up and push the buttons on the machine, at the end of the day, the machine does print out a piece of paper that says, you know, 212 of these votes were for so-and-so and 119 for such-and-such. So it does print it out. But the kind of paper trail that we want is what's called a voter verified ballot, printed ballot. In other words, you push the buttons on the voting machine, and when you push that final button that says, yes, that's my vote, it prints out a ballot. It prints out a piece of paper that tells you all the people you voted for and says, this is your vote. This is absolutely your vote. In fact, it may even have your name on it. And you look at that and say, yep, this is how I voted, and then you put that in a box, just like with a regular ballot. And if there's ever that box can be, and that is not the case. In fact, a large chunk of our voting machines do not, the vast majority of the electronic voting machines do not do that, and that's a serious problem. And so I would suggest you call her back and inform her, and then call us back and let us know what she said.
Okay, and also I called today and I told him that Sessions should contest the election.
Uh-huh.
And she said that's up to the states. And then I told her about Conyers' bill.
Yeah.
And then she said they'll look into it, but she didn't take my name or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Shelby's office was a lot more responsive both times I called.
Well, don't stop. Don't stop. And you know, let her know when you call. I mean, when you call up, the first thing to do, for example, when I called Jim Jeffords' office yesterday morning, I said, hi, my name is Tom Hartman, and here's my street address, and here's the city and zip code where I live, and here's my telephone number, and I'm a constituent, and I voted for Senator Jeffords, and I just, you know, here's my concern. I think that it is very important that he stand up on the floor of the Senate and say that he will join Senator Congressman Conyers in contesting the Ohio electors. And she said, okay, and she copied down all that information because they really do want it if you live in their district. What they're trying to filter out are the people who are not in their districts. You know, Barbara Boxer, for example, in California, there's been all this buzz about Barbara Boxer will be one of the ones who will contest the vote. And so people from Virginia, for example, like you, or Vermont, like me, have been calling Barbara Boxer's office. Well, Barbara Boxer doesn't respond to us. We're not the ones who elected her. And so, you know, when they get calls from people who are not in California, they're it's just reasonable for them to be polite, but by and large ignore them. But if you call and you say, I am a constituent of this elected official, he is my senator or she is my senator, and that's why I'm calling, then they will pay attention. And usually they'll want your personal contact information because they want to put you on the mailing list. And very often you'll get a little letter in the mail saying thanks so much for your offering your opinion, which you can keep as a souvenir because they like to do that because then they think that you'll vote for them in the future.
Oh, I forgot to tell you that I am from Alabama.
You are from – oh, you're from Alabama, but you called the Virginia senator?
Yeah, I'm just –
oh, you called your Alabama senator. I see.
I'm a truck driver. Just
I see.
Virginia.
So you just happen to be in Virginia right now. So Sessions. I'm sorry. I'm not all that familiar on which senators are where. Sessions is the Alabama. So you called your correct senator, right?
Yes, Sessions and Shelby.
Yeah, Shelby. Yeah. Okay. Well, call her back and then give us a call and let us know what happened, will you?
Okay. And also, I sent plenty of letters to the paper too. And sooner or later, they're going to publish one.
Yeah, I think I read one of your letters on the air, Alan.
I appreciate that, too.
And I appreciate you doing it. I think it's just great that you're out there, spreading the good word, because that's what it's going to take to take back back our democracy here in the United States, to bring back democracy, is folks like you, Alan, and others out there speaking out, making the phone calls, writing the letters, contacting the editor. Don't be afraid to even call the editor of the newspaper and say, hey, how come you're not publishing my letter?
Yeah, okay, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I called the editor of the Burlington Free Press here in Vermont one time and said, how come you're printing all this right-wing stuff, all these right-wing editorials? And he said, well, it's what people want to hear. And I said, it's not what I want to hear. And within 2 weeks, there were some left-wing editorials starting to appear. So it may or may not have been cause and effect, but, we got to be uppity here. We got to speak out. Alan, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. And keep on trucking there. Keep on doing the great work you're doing. I do appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour in the Tom Hartman program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. I don't want all of my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, maybe there are some things you don't want to know about. For example, did you know that Congress members of Congress are not excluded? One study by the University of Memphis found that 70 are not excluded. Let me start over here. There are all these ethics rules about what members of Congress can and cannot do and ways that they can and cannot enrich themselves. And one of the ways that members of Congress can not enrich themselves is by, like, taking bribes, taking cash, you know, in certain obvious ways. However, there is nothing... Well, here, let me just read. Jonathan Turley wrote this great piece for USA Today. It's called, And It's All Legal. I'll just share with you some of Jonathan Turley's observations. He's speaking to a member of Congress. He says, you can make more than a single stock trade, more in one stock trade than in a lifetime of public service. And Congress has excluded investment income, such as stocks, from ethics limitations on income. Therefore, guess how members of Congress very often make all their money? By trading stocks. Now, why would they do that? Well, see, if you are on a committee and there's a piece of legislation before you that says, why don't we pass this No Child Left Behind Act, which is going to require schools to buy tests from testing corporations. And the testing corporation stock is selling at $12 a share right now. And it's about a $400 million a year industry nationwide. But once this law passes, there's going to be billions of dollars that are going to be spent on tests. So these testing companies' stock is going to go through the roof. So I think I'll buy a whole bunch of testing company stock, and I'll vote yes on this bill. And suddenly, you know, if you buy, say, 10,000 shares at $12 a share, it's $120,000. And let's say the stock goes up fourfold. You just made $300,000, $400,000. All perfectly legal. All perfectly legal. Turns out 75% of randomly selected members of Congress had stock transactions that directly coincided with their legislative activity. 75%. This was a study done by the University of Memphis. Another study by Alan Zabrowski of Georgia State University and three colleagues showed that U.S. senators beat the market handily by 12 percentage points in their investments, outperforming even corporate insiders by 8 points between 1993 and 98. Is this because they're brilliant at trading stocks? Somehow I doubt it. Somehow I doubt it. Rule number two, profit take before you legislate. Oh, this is interesting. Ted Stevens is the ultimate rags to riches story in Congress, says Jonathan Turley in USA Today. Stevens came to the Senate with modest means, particularly after heavy investment losses in the 1980s. But in 1997, Turley says he had a Scarlett O'Hara, I'll never be hungry again moment. According to a Los Angeles Times investigation, he decided to, quote, get serious about making money, end quote, and contacted lobbyists about possible deals. Real estate developer Jonathan Rubini arranged for Stevens to get into a deal in which he turned $50,000 into $1.5 million, or as much as $1.5 million. And Stevens was the only investor not liable for any debts, the Times said. In the meantime, he muscled through a $450 million contract for Rubini from the military, despite the view of Air Force officials that Rubini, quote, lacked capacity and adequate funding. Now, in my opinion, this means Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska is somewhere between unethical scum and a criminal. Senator Stevens, if you are listening, please call our show and explain your behavior. I would be glad to be corrected on the air if I am wrong. If not, we'll just assume that it stands. Representative Jim Moran, Democrat of Virginia, took an unsecured $250,000 loan from a drug company lobbyist and then pushed a bill to benefit of that company. Nothing new here. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
On Monday, United Airlines said it reached tentative agreements with two unions representing its workers. The bankrupt airline is seeking ratification of a contract with the Transport Workers Union and the Professional Airline Flight Control Association by Thursday. The airline is attempting to impose pay cuts on nearly 8,500 employees in an attempt to save $112 million a year. The two unions involved in Monday's agreement only represent 195 members. Last Thursday, the flight attendants threatened that if pay cuts are imposed, they will strike. In addition, the airline has yet to reach agreements with unions representing mechanics and ramp workers. A bankruptcy court hearing that will determine the fate of United's plan to invalidate existing contracts is scheduled to start on Friday.
Nurses on strike at St. John's Medical Center in St. Louis are headed back to the bargaining table after 21 days on strike. The UFCW's Ed Finkelstein told Workers Independent News by cell phone that new talks will happen this week.
The federal mediator just announced minutes ago that the nurses and the hospital will be going back into negotiations this coming Friday. The union is hopeful that they'll have serious negotiations, meaningful negotiations.
Finkelstein says the union hopes these talks will be productive.
If they do what happened before, then it'll be a short negotiation. But we're being optimistic at this point that the hospital will come back into meaningful negotiations.
Finkelstein says solidarity among striking nurses is strong and that there's been an outpouring of community support for their strike. Over the weekend at a Rams home game, striking nurses collected coats and other items for indigent St. Louis area people and also for tsunami relief. Finkelstein says key issues in the strike don't revolve around money, but instead around patient care.
Employees at New York City's 311 helpline are calling for assistance against what organizers call a vicious anti-union campaign. Labor organizers for the Communication Workers of America, Local 1180, are alleging that King Teleservices, a private company that handles some of the calls on the line, has been trying to prevent attempts by employees to unionize. While company management says they have not been practicing intimidation, a memo was circulated in December that strongly urged employees to not sign any union petitions or cards. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 37 companies are now featured on WashTech's offshore tracker. Located at techsunite.org, the tracker keeps track of jobs that have been lost due to offshoring. Between the beginning of 2000 and the end of 2004, more than 300,000 jobs have been sent out of the United States, resulting in an estimated 154,000 jobs lost. The tracker also monitors where those jobs are going. The most recent update of 20,000 jobs sent offshore includes countries like Russia, Ghana, Honduras, and of course, India and China.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Just before our stock did tank, we sold and took it to the bank. The workers still got screwed. It was our intention to build the working dude right out of his pension. We're Enron.
Oh, it's Enron. What a great company.
The big contributions. Now he's working for us.
Yeah, it was the Enron private jet that shuttled George W. Bush around from election event to election event throughout the 2000 election. What a sweet corporation. You know, it's just amazing. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Show, Viagra for your brain. And apparently some of the folks in our chat room have been hitting on the Viagra. What is this? I love Rama. Okay. Maybe they have been meeting at democraticmatch.com, and then coming to, and now Rama says I love Enron. Starting a 900 number, are we? Well, yeah. See, you've got to be in the chat room to know what I'm talking about, and I'm not gonna carry it any further than that. We will just. Gently leave it at that. Anyhow, welcome back. Ted Stevens, how could this guy, I mean, if here I am in Vermont, the People's Republic of Vermont, we're a fairly small state. I think Alaska is a large state geographically, but population-wise is a fairly small state. How is it that the people allowed this to happen? I can't imagine Pat Leahy or Jim Jeffords, if word got out that some businessman had allowed them, one of them, to invest $50,000 and had then gotten a return of $1.5 million, and at the same time had voted on a great big, you know, boondoggle, multi-million dollar, well, specifically $450 million contract for that company. Well, you know, when you think about it, really, you put it in the context of prostitution or something, Ted Stevens is pretty cheap. I mean, this guy Rubini got $450 million, or his company did, according to this article in the USA Today by Jonathan Turley. He got $450 million as a result of Stevens' efforts, in part, and Stevens only got $1.5 million. Our politicians are really for sale quite cheap. So this now again, we got folks like these Greens who are going, well, this is just proof that it's the Democrats and Republicans are all corrupt, they're all terrible. And you get Jim Moran, Democrat of Virginia, taking an unsecured $250,000 loan from a drug company lobbyist and then pushing through a bill that benefits the company. What's that about? It's about corruption. But it's legal. That doesn't make it right. But that also doesn't mean that the solution for this is to vote for Ralph Nader. The solution for this is to get involved in the parties of these people and take back those parties. If you're a Republican with some ethics, join the Republican Party, get involved, take it back. Take it back from Reverend Moon, who owns more of your Republican Party than you realize. Take it back. Take the Democratic Party back from the Democratic Leadership Council folks, the large multinational corporation. You know, when Bill Clinton started that thing back in 92, more or less, his argument was the Republicans have all the money because they are in the pockets of the corporations. The money is with the corporations. The unions are dying out because Reagan has been successful in his war on organized labor. We're not going to turn that around in time to get for Clinton to get elected. And so he had to take corporate money in order to get elected in 92. And he was willing to do that. I mean, he was willing to say, okay, I will sell myself to you guys. Here I am. Come and get me. Come and take. This is outrageous. This is wrong. And to this day, you've got these guys, the Democratic Leadership Council. Well, the Democratic Party needs to be moved more to the center. What does the center mean? More into the pockets of the corporations. I think not. I think not. And Clinton could have argued, and did, that this was necessary, and Gore, that this was necessary, and the other DLC Democrats. And odds are one of them is going to end up head of the Democratic Party this time around. Because we're almost there. There's a lot of us who have been pushing the Democratic Party and participate, but we don't have it yet. Odds are we're going to end up with a DLC Democrat in charge of the Democratic Party. But there's still chance. There's still time. There's still an opportunity for us to take this party back. Rule number three, says Jonathan Turley. Your children are your security. Consider Kurt Weldon's 29-year-old daughter. He's the Republican from Pennsylvania. His daughter, prior to all of this, had, shall we say, no foreign policy experience. We'll just leave it at that. Nonetheless, she was given a lobbyist contract of $250,000 from Serbian interests allied with accused war criminal Slobodan Milosevic. Plus, a Russian aerospace manufacturer gave her $20,000 a month. Now, this congressman from Pennsylvania, Representative Kurt Weldon, now that his 29-year-old daughter is getting $250,000 from mass murderer Milosevic, and Vlad the Impaler, now he is pushing to get visas for Serbians and deals for the Russian company. What a surprise. No, he didn't take any money. He didn't take any money, but his daughter sure did. Consider Trent Lott's son, Chet. The once Senate Majority Leader. His credentials? He knew how to play polo. You know, he knew how to ride around on a horse with a polo stick or whatever they call it, mallet or whatever they call it. And he knew how to play polo. And he ran a Domino's pizza chain in Kentucky. That's serious experience. Yet, notes Turley in the USA Today article, Chet Lott, Trent Lott's son, was given a huge salary representing telecommunications and other interests, according to the Los Angeles Times stories. The Times also reports that Ted Stevens' wife, back to Ted Stevens again, Catherine, is paid by a law firm representing business interests to monitor appropriations issues. A task made a bit easier by her being married to the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. So you want to buy a member of Congress? You want to buy a senator? You want to buy Ted Stevens? You want to buy Trent Lott? Well, the law says you can't buy them, but you can buy their wives. You can buy their kids. And then just as if by magic, suddenly they start voting the way you want them to. Isn't that remarkable? Isn't that absolutely remarkable? Rule number four, you can never have too much education. Education. Well, what does this mean? Now, you're a member of Congress. It's important to get educated, right? I mean, you have to learn about things that are going on. Did you see the movie The Aviator? We saw this movie, The Aviator, over the weekend. And Alan Alda plays the part of the senator. And this is all, you know, from the actual transcripts. This back and forth between the senator, was a Senator Bentley, I think, and Howard Hughes. And, you know, it was a classic example of corruption. The senator was pushing the Pan Am agenda and all that. And Pan Am was giving this senator free flights all over the world, and this came out, and it embarrassed the senator, or rather hurt him. In fact, Howard Hughes won that debate. You would think maybe since this happened in the 50s that it was all over. No way. Actually, it happened in the late 40s. Now we find, for example, Richard Burr, the Republican of North Carolina, in 2002 was educated at the expensive Bellagio Hotel in Las Vegas with first-class airplane tickets, an open bar for poolside drinks, and other educational expenses paid for by the National Association of Broadcasters. Wasn't that nice? I wonder how Congressman Burr will vote on issues of import to the National Association of Broadcasters. The trip's purpose, says Turley, a public policy conference. Burr later went to learn about a nuclear site in Nevada's Yucca Mountain, but not content to simply, to quote Jonathan Turley, not content to simply visit the Nevada desert, Burr and Representative John Bonier, Republican of Ohio, arranged for a lobbyist to educate them and their spouses in Barcelona and Seville. That's Spain, for those of you who might be geography challenged. Here's another one. Yeah, these are all, with one exception, these have all been Republicans. But I'll be the first to acknowledge that there are Democrats who are doing this, too. And that's why we need to get involved in politics. Former Representative Tom Bliley, Republican from Virginia, then chairman of the Commerce Committee, writes Jonathan Turley in USA Today, had a tobacco company send him and his wife on the Concorde to London at a cost of $24,000. And then put them up at the famous Savoy Hotel at $1,000 a night. National Public Radio then said that they were educated at the Wimbledon tennis finals with tickets costing roughly $3,000. So, for the new members of Congress, learn the ropes. No, I'm not going to be that cynical. What I'm going to say is that you and I have to raise our voices about this and say, this is absolutely outrageous, and we are not going to tolerate it anymore. This is absolutely wrong. Wrong with a capital. We are not going to take this. This is wrong. Howard Beale had some thoughts on that. Remember good old Howard Beale? He was rather outspoken.
You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
And we have to. We have to. This is the level of outrage which is absolutely necessary. We must speak out. We must. If one of your members of Congress was one of the ones that I was talking about, I hope you are doing something about it. And if not, I still hope that you will contact your elected representatives and say, we would like to see some integrity back in government, please. I want to know what you're taking from lobbyists. Please inform me. If we put enough heat on these men and women, if we put enough pressure on them about not being corrupted by corporate money, then maybe we will see laws passed like there have been in Maine and Arizona that open up the electoral process by offering public financing or putting limits and caps on the amount of corporate money or even individual personal money that can go into elections. I mean, you have a situation here where it cost Bloomberg over $90 a vote to become mayor of New York. What's wrong with this picture? And then what do they do when they get in power, these guys? They try to make it so that those who are powerful and rich are more well insulated against the rest of us, very simply. George W. And this is what conservative judges is all about. This is what tort reform is all about. Over the Christmas break, President Bush resubmitted 20 judicial nominees whom the Senate previously failed to confirm to the federal bench. You've no doubt heard about this. Arlen Specter, a little disappointed, but he has made his ritual oblations. Here are three. Actually, more than three. Bush's judicial nominees represent 3 points. Bush's judicial nominees represent extreme and divisive views about law and society, notes the American Progress Action Fund. Bush nominee William J. Haynes IV, Pentagon General Counsel. Yes, let's have the Pentagon General Counsel be a lifetime federal judge. Has defended torture and was responsible for the legal guidelines for the highly criticized military tribunals planned for Guantanamo Bay. A great man for the federal bench. I'm sure Limbaugh loves him. Alabama Attorney General William Pryor, another Bush nominee, considers Roe v. Wade to be, quote, the worst abomination of constitutional law in our nation's history. He'd be a guy that Bill O'Reilly would love, and has defended restrictions on abortions even when they are designed to protect the health of pregnant women. You're pregnant, you're sick, you're going to die if you have the baby. Tough luck. Bush nominee Justice Janet Rogers has attacked Social Security and stated today's senior citizens blithely cannibalize their grandchildren. Give me a break. These are the people George Bush wants on the bench. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
Female killer whales spend decades as grandmothers, and biologists wonder why. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Female killer whales tend to outlive their male counterparts by at least 30 years. The males usually die after they've passed their peak reproductive age, but female whales can live up to 50 years after they've stopped having calves. This dramatic gap in life expectancy has scientists wondering if grandmothers have a special function in social groups of killer whales. Linda Jones is a marine mammal expert with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Seattle. Jones says male killer whales mature around the age of 15 and they die in their 20s. But the females live much longer, and they live long after their prime reproductive years have come to an end.
Females mature at about 13 to 15 years. At about 40 years, they no longer reproduce. But there are females that are over 90 years old, so they can live a very long time in this post-reproductive phase. Why would a society have these post-reproductive females? What do they contribute to the population?
One possible explanation is that these grandmothers help raise the young. Jones says post-reproductive females in other species fill that role, but this has not been studied with killer whales. People don't know for sure why the grandmother whales stick around for so long, but Jones says it's important to figure that out. Some populations of killer whales are declining. She says the old females might provide clues about how pods of killer whales function and survive. That information might help people do a better job of protecting these marine mammals. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
You gave them the old razzle-dazzle. You razzle-dazzled them. You gave them an act with lots of flash in it. Made them believe you were compassionate. Gave them the old hocus pocus. You misdirected them. With 9/11 and Saddam Hussein.
And welcome back.
You played them both right to perfection.
Yes,
despite
indeed.
The fact there's no connection. You razzle-dazzled them. Let those blue states complain.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. You're going to hear increasingly, you're going to hear this loud chorus, particularly in the media, particularly on faux news, but also on mainstream news. You're going to hear this chorus about these 20 judges that Bush has reintroduced. And how, you know, it's a terrible thing that the Democrats are filibustering these people. They're preventing people from getting on the federal bench. Here's the reality. George W. Bush has had more judges confirmed in 4 years than Reagan did in 8 years, or Bill Clinton did in 8 years, or his father did in 4 years. The last Congress approved 204 judicial nominees and reduced the court vacancy rate to its lowest level in 15 years. Far from being unfairly blocked, President Bush's extreme 20 were blocked for solely for the purpose of protecting the integrity of our federal courts. When Bush puts forward moderate judges, they are confirmed. And it happens over and over and over again. He has had 204 judges confirmed. That's more than Reagan did in 8 years. That's more than Clinton did in 8 years. The Republicans kept Clinton's nominees bottled up as well. So when you hear this nonsense on the media, let your BS detector go off and know that you are hearing lies. That they're mocking us, hurting the federal judiciary. No, sorry, it's not. So anyhow, Our NLP lesson tomorrow will be tomorrow, by the way, instead of this afternoon. It'll be tomorrow in the second hour, second half of the second hour of our program. And what's that I hear?
Welcome.
It's Thomas Jefferson. And there's the mouse. Oh, and there's the cat. Oh, no. Oh, my. No, the mouse is still around. He's still out there. Thanks to Louise for producing and engineering our program today, to Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet at radiopower.org, to Ben Birch for our archives at White Rose Society, the folks in our chat room for showing up. So good to see you all. And all our listeners, folks who called in, our sponsors, including democraticmatch.com. Thanks a lot. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to...